Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
I was really expecting a whoa instead. Man, how are people going to know what's going on?
Do we not do a quote? I assume you're going to start reading the quote.
A quote? I don't think we've done a quote for Props and Slops so far. I think we just kind of went into it, didn't we?
I don't know. Hi, I'm Aaron.
I'm Will. And I swear,
I'm Roy. I was muted. I was muted. I apologize.
Roy sitting here like, I hate this.
I enjoy this.
What is? There's a new She-Ra season coming out. Props to that.
Season 5. And the final season, it has been announced.
Yeah. I believe it's 5 seasons already.
Man.
Yeah, well, they've been dropping them like twice a year, though, so that's part of why it seems so fast.
Well, that's on Nickelodeon, right?
No,
it was on Cartoon Network.
No, Netflix.
Oh, Netflix. Okay.
Yeah.
I was
reading a little bit about it today. Evidently, like, I guess when they got hired for the show, they were told how many episodes that they were going to get. Right then.
That's smart.
So they've had the endpoint in mind, and they could plan out when they wanted their season breaks and stuff. That's part of why the seasons have been kind of some weird lengths.
Huh.
That sucks that it's ending, because I love that show, but at least it all has been pre-planned. So.
Yeah.
I've watched most of the first season. It is A, very good, and B, very queer positive. I'm a really solid fan. Now that I know it's ending, I might actually watch it. So.
Yeah, it's super fun. We still have a couple episodes to watch of the most recent season, but we like it.
Suddenly, I'm aflush with free time. Awash with free time.
Since we are a spoiler full show, which is worth pointing out to listeners, rather than a spoiler. What? Spoiler-less
free, spoiler
show?
Light.
Spoiler-free, spoiler-light, whatever. I will point out that Catra just never gets better. She only gets worse. So, just so you know, she is a terrible, terrible person.
Can we be diet spoilers so that, like, we're just as bad for you as regular spoilers, but we're somehow way more annoying about it?
You get to feel like it's better. Like, mentally, you think it's better, even though it doesn't make any real difference?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's probably how our listeners are right now, right? Like, they're listening to us. It's like they're getting the diet version of human interaction while they're trapped in their homes, but it really doesn't fulfill it. Seems legit, right?
I don't view people as being trapped in their homes. I view them as doing an important social duty. So you're listening to this while doing an important social duty of staying as much away from other people who aren't in your immediate family as possible.
So for those of you listening, it's nice, Alan. For those of you listening, it is currently St. Patrick's Day as we're recording this. Slops to the coronavirus, but props to everyone doing their social duty by not being at a bar this weekend or two.
or tonight, since, you know, many people have off work today and tomorrow.
Yeah. So. There's probably more than a few out there.
So, if you are, however, at a bar, A, what are you doing listening to this podcast? But B, please stop listening. You deserve no more joy. You're being bad for people.
It's true. It's true.
So, is this the biggest thing that's happened to Western society in about 80 years?
In how many years?
80-ish? In World War II, at least, 80? Right?
No.
Depends on exactly what you measure.
So there's what? The oil shocks of the 70s. There's the AIDS crisis.
This is worse than that. Like on a day-to-day basis, like not for every community.
I mean,
right?
The AIDS crisis is 100% not worse than this. But not the AIDS crisis, I mean, is worse than this. I mean, the whole reason, one of the reasons why we're doing this is because of how bad the AIDS crisis is. Have you seen like we've learned so much because of our botching the AIDS crisis in the 80s through homophobia and racism.
I feel like that was just community specific, right? Like, while it was completely horrible, and I do not mean to minimize the extent to which it was horrible, I think the scope to which this is occurring is far greater. Like, the AIDS virus, terrible as it was, didn't shut down any.
I mean, it's fair enough, but I just think,
like, we're at like one full country shutdown and like five other national emergencies.
I mean, only
like
one full.
China and South Korea are also pretty shut down.
Along with Italy, was it Sweden or Norway? One of the Nordic countries.
That level of like everywhere, not just Western nations, is I think what's just like it's the biggest disruption to day-to-day life in modern society.
I mean, if you're just talking disruptions to day-to-day life, though, I will nod back to Roy's comment on the oil situation in the 70s. That messed with
And that wasn't just the United States. Like,
yeah, but
I think
it was more localized, right? Like, so I think what we're missing is like Colombia's borders are closed, Ecuador's borders are closed, Venezuela's a disaster, but their borders are closed. Like, half of Asia's completely screwed. I've heard literally nothing from Africa, but most of Europe, like, that's obviously North America, right? Like, it's almost every continent. Like, the sheer level.
No, I
topped the oil crisis.
How am I put this? This is a classic, like, historian dilemma, which is we are in this moment right now, and it is difficult for us to see outside of it because it is massively disrupting our lives. I mean, obviously, like, I have not been at work for 2 days and do not have going to work for the foreseeable future, which is super weird. I'm not the only person that's like this. You know, celebrities are sick. People's relatives are sick or dying. Like, it is huge disruption. But we can't see 5 years from now what this will look like. Like, will it?
Disruption and impact. I'm not arguing that it has the big impact. I don't know what the impact is. That's it.
I mean,
disruption is enduring, right? Like, that's what I'm arguing. I mean, scope and width, I think, of disruption.
Yeah, I mean, how do I put this? It's definitely one of the biggest ones because its disruption is immediate. That as soon as your country or state or city or county or whatever goes into what's the term they're calling them now? Locked. That's like, what's the term? It's suppression. There we go. Into suppression mode. It is instantly disruptive in a way that, say, outside of some areas, things like the oil crisis wasn't necessarily, you know, you didn't wake up one morning and go, oh, Jenny, the oil crisis really got us today. But it was massively disruptive over a series of months. right? And it was and throughout the world, right? You know, not just the United States, but also in Europe, also in South America. Like, and it was disruptive in positive ways in some places. Like, if you're an OPEC country, things got good. In Venezuela, part of its problems actually come from this era and things like that. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, I agree with the Glazer. Like, obviously, everyone is disrupted by this in the short term. But I can't. I'm not comfortable saying like this is the most disruptive event in the last 80 years, because like, you know, just years of being trained as a historian tells me that you have this. This is specifically where your analysis breaks are supposed to be pulled on and be like, look, we can put this in context of this event, but we can't say it's X, Y, and Z, most something, best something, blah, 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 because we don't know it.
I'm going to go out on a limb. This isn't best in.
Well, yes, I agree. It's definitely not best anything. Okay. Definitely not in the United States. So, uplifting.
Yeah, what a downer to start this week on. Whew.
Well, let's go straight to a prop. Props to media companies that are releasing things right away for us. Right, like props to specifically Disney for releasing Frozen 2 on Disney Plus 3 months early.
No way.
Like,
I give that sucker a slop because they did it like 4 days after we rented it. And now we wouldn't have had to rent it.
Look, you can rewatch it. My wife saw it 3 times in the theater.
Wow.
It's a very good movie. Not great, but very, she really loved it. And you know,
and also
we also have
that. Child.
But it's a very good movie. It's worth watching at least twice. And the ability for people to see media they would really like to see while trapped at home is generally like really, really. So Disney did something right. How often do we get to prop Disney?
That's fair. Not often.
Yeah, no. That's true. Yeah, I was excited to see it. Toy Story 4 is also on there, which I haven't. Well, I mean, I'll check Disney. Since Mandalorian stopped, I haven't been checking Disney Plus that often.
You should try having a 4.
Well, I agree. I do not have a 4.
Do you miss the 90s? If you're feeling awfully nostalgic for the 90s right this moment like I am, it's a great place to be.
I saw like Sister Act is on there. there's a bunch of weird – and of course like one of my favorite unironic, enthusiastic – I didn't even know Disney owned this movie now. 10 Things I Hate About You is on that.
There.
I think I own that in like 7 different digital formats. I have a totally legally acquired version. I have an Apple Store version. I think it's on my PlayStation. Like, I love that movie. Unironically, it is pure gold, pure gas. Since we're on a gaming podcast, might as well use a gamer term. So I'll prop that movie, even though I haven't seen it in like a year. So maybe I'll watch that.
I would like to let you guys know that my neighbors have finished having sex upstairs.
Congratulations to them.
Hopeful
note to self. Props and Slops is now going to be an explicit show. That was an explicit show.
I phrased that very carefully, so that would be like acceptable.
You should have said, for Will's sense of ears, you should have said, finished engaging in.
Look, all I know is a week and a half ago, they had sex like twice, and since this quarantine, man, they gonna have a baby.
yep, we're about to have Boomer Generation 2.0.
Not a joke, literally, like every night, like right above my living room, like amazingly rhythmic sex.
You weren't even mad,
you were just impressed.
I mean, like, but like at the exact same rhythm, it's like no switch up of stroke, nothing. Very, now we're explicit.
My first way downhill. My first apartment in Philly had neighbors that you could definitely hear them engaging in intimate relations, and it led to, how I put this, you could tell that they had an unconventional relationship.
I'm cool. thinking that is as close to that particular danger zone as we should get on this show.
Let's move onward. Did anyone see Onward before? Did I talk about Onward last time?
Oh, I have not yet.
Is that the new Pixar movie that looks firmly mediocre?
It is, in fact, decent, which is another way to say firmly mediocre. We Chuck Noah.
Yeah, but is it like Pixar mediocre still like a solid step above most other movies? Or do you mean it's mediocre compared to normal movies?
It's a bottom five Pixar. Like, so did you guys actually,
that's all they've been producing recently. I haven't seen Toy Story 4.
So. Did you guys see The Good Dinosaur, which is also on Disney Plus?
No.
The Good Dinosaur is a Pixar movie. It is perfectly acceptable. Like, if you watch it, you'll be entertained, and then you will not find much need to see it again. However, it has dinosaurs, so I have seen it 300 times. Onward is about as good as it.
Gotcha.
It's perfectly fine. It's a good little movie. It's got some nice emotional beats. It's funny at times. It's got Chris Pratt, who is consciously always Chris Pratt. It's got Tom Holland, and never not hear him in Holland. It's a very nice little movie. And Pixar used to do things that were like,
they used to do up.
Okay.
I mean, Coco is the last great one, right?
Oh, I still haven't actually watched Coco, but the previews always looked great.
It's
Coco or it's Pixar, no, right? It's not Disney. Pixar animated.
Have you guys not seen it?
Yeah, I actually thought it was Disney animated, and I didn't realize that. Okay.
It is Pixar, and you guys have 2 weeks to watch it so we can talk.
Hey, we're not as locked down over here as you are. I still got to work.
You should be. Oh, really? Jeez, not for long, buddy.
Turns out there is a pretty insane refinance boom going on homes right now thanks to the low interest rates. So my work is crushed.
Yeah, you're not going to be working. You won't be working.
Well,
don't care about that. Either way, fine time. Both of you have 2 weeks. Watch Coco. Trust me. Just trust me. It's like a top five Pixar movie. It's Wall-E level
good. Okay. That's pretty good.
Like Wall-E up. My wife just yelled up at me. Wall-E up. What else? Inside Out. Like, that's the top level, right? Incredibles 1. It's to that level. I can't believe Roy hasn't seen it.
What?
Coco.
Seen what? Oh, Coco? Yeah, I don't know. My wife's not a big, like, Disney Pixar person, so.
You've got 2 weeks. She'll be on your computer. Watch it. We'll talk about it in 2 weeks.
Well, we'll see. I'll put it on the list. It'll probably be towards the bottom, but again, I will definitely.
You've got so much free time right now, Roy.
I do. I do have free time, yes.
But
I want to get through The Expanse, so that's my current goal now. I found
the
TV goal.
That's what's happening to my waist while I'm sitting at
home. Ooh, I need to watch that.
Well, same.
Your waist, that is. The television show.
Yeah.
Like, if you just set up a live stream of that, yeah. Make my day go by.
Well, in fairness, since Second Sons is gone, I have no idea what happened to my webcam.
Oh.
Yeah. They were like, hey, want to Google Hangouts with students? And students were like, please? Because I was like, God, are you insane? There's no chance of that happening. I will post work. All right, next up. Proslops. I'm not sure. I think it's Sword of Slops to Castlevania Season 3.
I mean, it was definitely weaker.
Ooh, Slops. Most people have liked it, what I've seen.
It felt like Season 1. Season 1 was basically a cool start and setup. And Season 3... like, it endeavored to have its own plot, right? But it was mostly just set up for what's going to be Season 4.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. It felt like there wasn't any, like, defined goal or anything we were really headed to, which now that you think make me think back of season one was kind of similar. Like, one and two really felt like they should have been one season. So maybe when four drops, it'll feel like three and four should have been one season.
Yeah, the entire Belmont Cypha plot felt like a side quest, right? And then the...
Well, yeah. Oh, isn't it? Because isn't the main villain yes, gone but, now?
Well, no, he's we're for a working little bit. Towards, again, spoiler, healthy. We're working toward the Lady Vampire, who was a main antagonist of season Camilla. Two. Who tried to betray Camilla, thank you. Camilla and her sisters being other women vampires who are her partners.
Right.
And we're working toward them and their new campaign to conquer a certain area. But that plot isn't really resolved. That plot is set up, and that feels like it's the next yeah. major plot. Well, Alucard's plot was just a waste. If they just skipped Alucard for a season, his plot was terrible.
Yeah, that was weird. The Camilla stuff and like with Hector and all, it feels like we only got the first chunk. Like we got act one of that. Like all this work to get Hector into a place where he has to help them felt like you said the setup, like, and nothing else actually happened on their front. And the Alucard front, I mean, literally he's in the same place at the end as he was at the beginning, both like literally and figuratively, right? Like he's physically still mm-hmm. there, and his mental state, his emotional state, everything has completely been reset to the same hellhole he was in to start with. So it felt like just a weird long setup to give me that weird long sex scene at the end. So yeah.
Wow. Castlevania has sex scenes? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm not going to say it went really full awkward. Hentai, but it was racier than I expected.
I mean, genuinely, straight up nude people and long term, like a threesome and then another sex scene.
Whoa.
A threesome and while what was effectively a rape was also happening in another scene, and they were cutting back to rape.
No, the other scene was consensual. It was just a trick.
I would say the context of that and the fact that she was using it to bind Hector to slavery makes that whole concept of consent pretty fuzzy.
Okay. I mean, he clearly consented. Like, he chose to make that swear. That was the whole trick of it, right? It was very shitty, but like, yeah, I don't know. Either which way.
I'll just say
gross and
all of that tied in together is real awkward.
I didn't super need any. Like, I just didn't. I felt like this season. And I watched it in a day. So it was entertaining, right? It just, none of it needed to have happened. Like, I didn't need the season to exist for any plot purpose, for any character development purpose. It was just a bunch of stuff that happened. And like, so it's a slop.
You know, yeah.
And like, I love
what happened. And even like the judge, and you find out at the end about his little dark secret, but it was just like
that he's
stuff.
He's that randomly happened. Been killing children. What?
Yeah. It was so for no reason. It just
nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you know, so I wasn't sure, but I'm definitely coming down on the slop side more now that we're talking about it.
So like, I always assume in Warren Ellis comics, and we'll get to another Warren Ellis thing shortly, that the bald guy is going to be a good guy because he's really good friends with Grant Morrison, and he really loves basing characters physically off Grant Morrison. So now I'm worried Grant Morrison has been killing children.
Yeah, yeah, because even the other bald guy, what's his name? The other human, I forget. What they call them, the magicians that can like raise the
I forgot all about that.
Holy yeah God. there was that whole storyline which I forgot about right now, which also is another one where you think that like things like he basically had the same problem that Alucard had, right, where he started in this dark place and he ended in this dark place. I guess physically he moved, but that's all.
And I really like that whole little plot. Like, a lot of the early stuff was good. When he had the plot with the ship captain at the beginning, yeah, that seemed like it was going to be good. And a lot of the early stuff, Hector, seemed like it was going to be good. And a lot of the early stuff, Judge, seemed like it could go interesting places. None of it. It was just, why not just move on with the plot? Like, there was no, like, it's not like they're waiting for a manga to catch up to the anime, right? Like, they could just move, and they decide, which is not a problem Warren Ellis comics have, right? Like, he might decompress, but like, it's always,
I'm trying to think, what's the most recent Ellis comic?
Most recent thing I read was Wildstorm.
The like 52 version of Wildstorm, like where they were doing those
weekly issues. It was like 22 issues.
Yeah, I picked those up.
They're worth reading. They're very, very good. It does very interesting things. It moves, like, it's got real character development. It reduces everyone effectively. It's like, even the characters I don't have fun for are well handled. Okay. But yeah, the season was a thing.
It happened.
Okay. Definitely encourage me to watch it.
Honestly, if you skip it and just watch the next season, it's hard to imagine you've missed any.
Yeah.
Like, the chance of me getting around to Castlevania, like, I'm a person, like, I don't have a strong, I'm not a Castlevania gamer, I guess you could say, so I don't really have any, like, strong emotional attachment to the source material. I'm not, you know, the biggest Warren Ellis person as I've aged. So it's not something that super appeals to me. So maybe one day I'll be in like an anime mood and I'll be like, oh, I'll watch this, you know, Western anime or something, but I'd have to be in a very particular mood to want to watch Castlevania. So
that's understandable.
Something that,
at least if that mood ever fleetingly hits you, you're not committing to much. I think it's what, 8 half-hour episodes?
Yeah, it's very
something
fast
like that.
Ah, that is quick. Yeah, I mean, that actually slightly makes it more likely for me to to watch it.
My favorite game as a 9-8-year-old was Castlevania 3. I played 1 and 2, and I loved 1 and 2. But 3 was, like, the first game I ever went out, like, it bought when it came out. So, like, I love Castlevania 3, which is Trevor, is what this is based on, right? And then I bought a Genesis because it had Bloodline. And had to cut down. And then I didn't play Castlevania. I only played RPGs with the PlayStation until I got to college. And one of my friends had Symphony of the Night, which is a la carte. And like, so this is like.
And Trevor, right?
Sort of. As a villain. Yeah. Yes, I think that one might be the best. There's one really, really, really great one for the. What was it called? Not the Game Boy Color, but the one after. Advance. The Game Boy Advance.
Game Boy Advance. I thought you were going to say,
wasn't there a one for the PSP that folks said was really good?
I don't remember. But
probably. The PSP and PlayStation Vita had excellent
Aria
games on
of
it.
Sorrow, I want to say, was unbelievably great. Like, it wasn't as original. Like, Symphony of the Night, world-changing. Different, right? But, if you've ever played Final Fantasy 4 and 6, and like, they're basically the same game, except like, one is way more polished, it's like that. Like, Final Fantasy 4 was like groundbreaking and different.
They're totally not the same game, but
they have all the same mechanics and all the same like plot beats. And like, they're just very simple.
What? Wait. Four?
The one that was released in the US is 2, and the one that was released in the US is 3, both on the Super Nintendo.
No, 2 is not really.
Is 4 the one with the Black Knights and the White Knights that, like, like they're like friends and then he betrays
you? He's a dragoon, but he betrays you a lot. The plot of 6 is radically different.
Okay, similar. Okay. Really, really similar gameplay. Similar in.
That's Final Fantasy.
I mean, that's fine, yeah, because it does have the. 5 is the job.
Yes, 5 has the jobs.
I do not like 5. I really love
4. Okay.
The 4 and 6 feel really similar experience.
I have complex feelings about jobs.
But the story was great.
I've liked one job system ever, and it was tech. is the only job system. And Overcooked, I guess. Tactics games can have job systems. I don't like job systems in turn-based.
I mean, they can be okay. Tactics does probably the best job of any of the Final Fantasies I've played with a job system. A 5 I couldn't get through. Maybe that's going to be blasphemy to the real hardcores, but I couldn't get through 5. It was too...
I like Final Fantasy less than about 15 other RPGs there. So.
I have a strong attachment to the PlayStation era games in particular. Because I came to them a little late for someone of my age cohort. I wasn't able to play them until I went to college. So like I played 7, 8, 9, 10, and the first two Kingdom Hearts 2 wasn't out yet, but and Kingdom Hearts all my freshman year of college with my roommate Sam. And that kind of changed a lot of my tastes and shaped my video game love in a way. Unlike the people who like played 7 when they were in high school or middle school or elementary school.
We discussed this earlier.
So, yeah, we just did discuss this earlier. So I love 7 and I love 7 through and through. And 8 is my favorite Final Fantasy game. So.
But wait, no, hold on. So did I hear that right?
Yeah, I know.
I don't even know that I have enough time the whiteboard to unpack that this episode, but we're gonna devote an entire episode to Final Fantasies at some point here, and we're gonna
maybe hold on. Let's look at the schedule. So, it comes out the 10th.
If you wait till the end of the quarantine, I don't think it comes out the 10th anymore. It was just
no. I googled the hell out of it. It's still saying the 10th, including the official Final Fantasy.
Nico is never wrong, but okay. I'm in this series of Facebook group that one guy started like 10 years ago for just his various New York City friends that have grown forever. And like the guy who runs the groups is just like never wrong about things. And he was just like, here's what I saw. I posted a screenshot. I'd have to re-find it. No, but we'll worry about that later because people are listening to this 2 weeks later, so they know the answer. I only like 4, 6, and 9.
4, 6, and what was the last one?
9.
9's fine.
Gotcha.
I think I might have bought 10 on the Switch during one of my summer buying sprees, and if I did, I will replay it. I remember playing it in college with friends and really hating Titus. It's very hard to play in RPG.
Auron is the highlight of that particular Final Fantasy.
Titus was very frustrating. Did either of you guys play Shadow Hearts?
That's the 1920s RPG, right?
That? Yes. It is made by a Final Fantasy team that got frustrated around 10 with the direction of the franchise.
Right, and jump shift.
It's so good.
I've heard good things about it, but when I've looked at it mechanically, I don't know if I would enjoy it very much.
The mechanics are very
nice. I don't remember that one at all.
It's a PlayStation 2 game.
Is it even available right now?
There's 3. No, it's not on anything. I'm sure you could, whatchamacallit,
totally legally acquire it.
Yeah, totally legally acquire it if you chose. However, there's Shadow Hearts Covenant, Shadow Hearts Brave New World, and Brave New World is a disaster. Shadow Hearts and Covenant were like me and a friend of mine back then's favorite games. And when Brave New World came out, my friend messaged me like 6 months ago, a year ago, and was like, hey, I finally beat Brave New World. It was still fresh. Cool. But the other two are
heard good things
genuinely phenomenal games.
Well, one of these days, maybe I'll pick up a PS2 again or something.
I still have my PS2 somewhere.
Nice.
It was working a couple of years ago when I broke it out.
So if whichever one of you asks first, I have the greatest PS2 game that no one has ever played.
Which is what?
It's Sakura Wars. I'm 90% sure it's called.
I have heard of Sakura Wars. It was just recently re-released, actually.
Wait, on what?
Hold on. Give me a second. Google.
Re-release? Probably Switch.
No, it's not.
PS4. It's being remade. Sorry, it's a remake. Okay. So like not like
of which one?
Of the original. Of Sakura Wars.
So there's a million. Sakura Wars are basically never released in English. And after PS3 was out for like 2 years, I had we'll get to that story. After PS3 was out for like 2 years, they randomly localized a Sakura Wars in English. And it was so goddamn good, it blew my mind. It was around Hurricane Sandy, around when I met my wife. I played the crap out of it. It was just so good. It was a playable anime.
Yes. So that's basic. Yeah. So I was actually looking at this because it came across as a recommended game to me. Sakura Wars. It is a soft reboot and soft remake of the original game.
I will send you the place if you want. I will send it to you, but you have to send it back because even though I can't play it, I love it. You would love it. The guy who owned the website I used to write for had a PS3 at Inside Pulse and decided to buy a new one. And he had one of the very original PS3s that was fully backward compatible, sent it to me. And that's the way I played it. I was so happy. And then the only reason I stopped playing it is because that PS3 died.
So anyway, you don't have a PS4, right? You have a PS3, right?
I do not. But honestly, for Sakura Wars,
you're just better off waiting until the fall and buying a 5, which will be fully backwards compatible with 4 games.
It's 5, yeah. 5 is so expensive. Like, I don't care. There's been 0 PS4 games, I guess, besides Persona that I've really liked.
Buying the PS4 was one of the best, like, entertainment. Investments my family made. But I don't have a 4-year-old.
You don't have a 4-year-old. Like, I don't have access to my TV, basically. My TV is my son's. Well, okay. I have a Switch. And that's what that's for, right? Like, I have a Switch, and it's great. But, like, it's basically the TV is off on weekdays because if we turn it on, my son thinks it's in until he goes to bed. And then I have, like, 2 hours to spend with my wife. And that's for, like, things we watch together. We're doing, I don't know, props and slops.
That's all fair.
We're on like number 2 of our list. We should move on.
So what's next on the
list? I don't think we're making it through everything this week.
Well, my stuff will be quick. Because I haven't made it through anything. Weren't we going to talk about Warren Ellis? Wasn't that something we were going to do?
Yeah. Transmit.
Okay, I apologize.
I don't know how much really I had to say on it other than I saw some of it was available on Comixology, and after we were talking about it on Prop and Slops the other week, I thought, what the heck? I'll try and give it a reread. Then, of course, I found out that only the first 2 volumes are available again, and I'm not going to blow the money to purchase like 3 through 7 or however many there were.
Kind of like it's really bad towards the end, so...
Yeah, it's fascinating, right? I've been on kind of this 90s retro nostalgic kick, so it's interesting diving back into what was like edgy and transgressive and thought-provoking at the time, and now, I mean, there's still moments of that, but it's, I don't know. I'm obviously in a different place, and that probably has a good bit to do with it, but the rest of the world is too, right? Like, when the rest of the world is just doing the same thing that Ellis does or did, then, like, it doesn't feel as fun anymore. So, I mean, at least he's not Ennis to confuse people with similar-sounding names, but...
He's not Ennis.
And go back to our conversation from 2 weeks.
Ennis, I have so many mixed feelings about Transmet and Warren Ellis in general, but Transmet in particular. Like, I think it starts pretty strong. And then I think once the president is elected, it kind of loses loses a lot of its like oof power. And then like its ending is a little cheaty, I think.
So he had to die, right? Like, since we're spoiler free for 20-year-old comics, Spider Jerusalem should have died.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the entire thing set up is this giant tragedy for him to die. it's always been dissatisfying to survive. It doesn't work for the story, except that Warren Ellis fell in love with the character.
No, and I just, and like, I mean, it's also like when I was into Transmet peak was also the time in my life that I was into Hunter S. Thompson at my peak. And so like, as I have, as I moved away from HST as someone I think is a particularly valuable voice, I also moved away from Transmet. And I think, but Transmet also highlights a lot of Warren Ellis's issues. I mean, like, most writers are bad at endings. Warren Ellis, in particular, is really bad at endings. I'd say so.
Another example?
I mean, almost all of his superhero work. Let's see. What was his X-Men book he was on forever? The one he took over from Whedon.
Excalibur?
No, the one he was on took off from Whedon.
Oh, Astonishing. I did. No, no.
I looked at the X-Books. Jeez.
I just thought it was a... So the problem with that was, like, he wanted to seemingly write post-Grant Morrison stuff, and I think editorially he was forced to write post-Whedon.
Sure. Like, I'm more just saying, like, particularly how that ended, I remember being very unsatisfying. I think a lot of his late period Marvel work before he transitioned, sort of, I guess, the, like, get rich as you can writing superhero comics phase of Ellis's career, when he was writing Ultimates books, writing that endless X-Men run that he did. Like, did he do a Spider-Man series?
I consider that the...
I can't remember.
That's the dry series. Did you? No, he didn't. Did you guys ever read Fell?
Which one's Fell?
So there's this series. He writes this really weird noir detective thing.
I read,
which is like right up.
I read the first and it's bit of it. Yes.
Yeah, he decides to do single issues, like completely self-contained with an overarching plot, just show that it could still work because he's brought like. He's the decompression guy, yes. Right? Like, you could find articles written about how his decompression is. Like, he's like, screw that. I can do it the other way, and it's going to sell, and it's going to work. And he writes this series, and in the middle of it, his laptop crashes, and he had written, like, 4 or 5 issues in advance, and he didn't back it up. It was that era. And then it just ended. And it was, like, the end of his creative peak for me. After that, everything he did, that's when he did his, like, get rich or die trying. And it was just, like, he was so cool.
Yeah, his, like, 2000, like, I mean, probably the best work of his period was his short run on Iron Man that, of course, like, came up with Extremis and retooled Iron Man for the 21st century was probably, like, the best part of that era. Yeah. Wow, he also did a James Bond comic. Now I'm just like on his Wikipedia page. Like,
I'm digging in.
Oh yeah, Moon Knight. I always found to be overrated. Okay. Like a lot of it.
Oh, I like Moon Knight.
I don't know. I feel like Ellis is. What's the best way to put this? I think the best thing Ellis ever made. Was Planetary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, well, duh. But Planetary is a masterpiece and sticks the landing.
It does. And I think that, and like, I feel like it's one of those things where after I finished Planetary, I said to myself, I don't really need to read any more Warren Ellis comics, like, or at least his superhero works.
I mean,
like, it's just like.
To a certain extent, like, should he have even written after that? You know,
well, he had to.
It was kind rent of the culmination.
And all that other stuff.
Sure. Well, yeah, people are just going to. Cost him a ton of money.
But from a creative perspective, like, it felt like Warren Ellis was just done after that.
So
I really, really, really liked Wildstorm.
I do need to read it. I've got it, but it's in a long pile of comics I haven't finished. Thinking about this stuff, I actually need to restart because I only read the first couple trades worth of Dr. Sleepless, but had really liked it at the time.
Have you read Global Frequency? Global Frequency.
I have not.
Oh, you didn't like Global Frequency? I love
it. I thought it was all right.
I thought it was.
I guess.
the understanding of story and the amount of fun I have with.
I just, I don't know, the decompression. I always just found Ellis underwhelming. Of like all the great.
Wait, the frequency wasn't decompressed. It was.
Yeah, I'm not just talking specifically about like global frequency, which I only half remember, and I read like a couple of those issues and didn't particularly love it. Was just I find I guess Ellis of like the great British invasion folks, you know, so we got like Moore, Morrison, Millar, Ennis.
Oh, Moore's generation before. Moore's 80s. The others were all late 90s.
He started, but he ran through that 90s invasion. Like, he was still a cohort of them riding in that same weird kind of Vertigo vein.
Well, he created Vertigo. Like Moore, I mean, Moore set the... If we're going to be this, like, Moore set the agenda that all, like... I mean, not just the agenda of superhero comics, which he did for 20 years, but also set the agenda for a lot of the British... writers who invaded American comics, yeah. Right? Like, I mean, the biggest is Grant Morrison, yeah. Whose entire...
Arguably, they just want to be more.
Whose entire, like, work is at one point a love letter to Moore and a giant takedown of him. You know, it's a very edible
they're moment. Are you aware that they're enemy wizards, apparently?
Yes, I do. I am aware. I am so, aware.
Yeah. So, are they both sex wizards, or is that just... Is that just...
They're both actual wizards. Well,
no, they both consider themselves actual. So, yes. I think some of my favorite comics ever were that run of Stormwatch into Authority into... Like, I thought it all built on the thematic and general ideas of each. Really great. I looked up the... So, like, that is the big reason I love him. But I think Next Wave is the single funniest comic I've ever read.
Next Wave is very, very funny, but it's also like the problem. And Ellis's characters all have the same voice. It's a Morrison problem too.
I don't know if I agree with that. Like, I feel like
definitely Next Wave. That's definitely a Next Wave problem. Like all the characters.
But it was a comedy. But it's a comedy series, though.
I know. I'm just
right. Like a lot of Python has the same voice. Right. Like, it's just in comedy that's a thing that often happens. It doesn't bother me the same way. Because I don't think many of his characters in Authority / Planetary. Like, I don't think they have the same voice.
They definitely an Authority.
Oh, I don't like, think so.
Like, it's like cranked up on steroids, subversions of superhero tropes.
Sure, but the subversions weren't the same subversion.
No, but it was the same kind of subversion. Like, it's like, you know, in many ways, Millar. Well, you know, he just rips off everybody.
Millar is dumb. Yes, Millar is very dumb.
But it's just like Millar, like, I feel like a lot of the writing tics that Millar have are like parodies of Warren Ellis writing tics, which is that like a lot of characters, you know, they all have different tropes that they're playing, they're deconstructing, they're decompressing, but they all have like the same voice. But Ellis is a talented enough writer that like you don't always notice it, or sometimes it breaks beyond that. But Millar is like literally, you know. His characters sound like all our characters.
I've looked through a lot of Ellis's stuff now because I'm on the thing. Like, I hated Deviate. Right? Deviate was completely terrible.
What? I liked Deviate, but
it doesn't hold up.
I also enjoyed, you know, the whole teen Gen 13 type thing.
Yeah, and Deviate too at the time.
was a fun riff on that.
But after that, it's Stormwatch, Gen 13, Planetary, Authority, Global Frequency, and like those are all just fantastic. And Desolation Jones is really good. Like, Travel was really, really good. Like, there's just a lot of really good stuff that's not the Marvel stuff. There's Freak Angels was a lot of fun. Dr. Sleepless is great. He's definitely got motifs he returns to. I don't think, and he's got pet character archetypes that he returns to obnoxiously. But I don't think a lot of the plots and genres are as similar as you're crediting them. And
I mean, I think that's fair.
I generally think you're judging a little too heavily based on Marvel work, which in fairness is probably the majority of what most people read, right? It's just...
It's a majority of... I mean, I mean that's not true. I've read... Yeah. Like,
he changed Iron Man forever.
I said that earlier. Like, So, like, I think that was his best.
We're forgetting.
Besides Next Wave.
We are forgetting one seminal Marvel work of his. You guys are really missing out on if you haven't read it.
New Universal? Thunderbolt?
Nope.
Oh, God, nope. Not new.
Doom 2099.
That's right. He did do Doom 2099.
I love
it. That's right. He did do Doom.
Which was really good. And it had some of those similar themes that it sounds like you probably enjoyed in Authority and the like. I think there's definitely some parallels to draw. I
forgot that he did
2099. He did really good work on that. He did really good work on Hellblazer.
Yeah, he did good Hellblazer stuff. I mean, he's definitely one of the better.
And it was relatively early too. So it was like as Hellblazer is establishing voice post to lock. Yeah.
Was Ellis the one that was the cancer story?
No.
No, that's Ennis.
No. Ellis is post. Ennis, not post. He's post Ennis. Ennis is the mid 90s, right?
You're right. Because Hellblazer is 2000. You're right. It's later than I thought.
Yeah. It goes. I just had to look it up. Ennis Jenkins.
I only read Hellblazer.
I've read so much Hellblazer. Yeah. Like it go. Yeah, I had to double check my brain to make sure it was right. It's Jamie Delano, then who goes into Ennis, and then Paul Jenkins, then Ellis, then. Azzarello does the reboot, which I hate. I hate the Azzarello reboot.
I've never liked a Brian as well.
I'm also not overly fond of it.
You want someone
100 votes?
Not even. You want someone whose voice every character sounds exactly the same?
Yes, definitely true. I think Ellis's run is definitely one of the better like.
Horror-y ones, creepy ones.
Yeah, like Jamie Delano is a hip, like Jamie Delano and Ennis are the like two like pillar points, right? Of like what's the vision of the character, and you know, I'm more of a Jamie Delano person, but like I really still like Ennis's Hellblazer. Like that's probably of all of his work. That's probably what I still have the greatest fondness for. My heart though is the Mike Carey run. I feel like the Mike Carey
The Mike Carey run is great. Yeah,
is really good. It's a good compromise between the various different. And that's like the Mike Carey shtick is like finding like perfectly middle of the road creative directions that like take a bunch of like what's worked from other writers and kind of synthesizes them in a way that is respectful of that previous work but pushes it in a different direction. So
there's something to be said for that interpretation. Didn't he do the Lucifer reboot as well?
Oh, he did. Yeah. I mean, that's another great one.
That's probably why I didn't mind that reboot. I thought it was going to be real tough to follow that up, but it was solid.
So, I mean, Mike Carey is probably my favorite of the comic writers of that, like, era, but he did some really garbagey Marvel work too. His X-Men run was really bad. His Ultimate Fantastic Four run was bad. He was on X-Men for a long time, wasn't he too?
He did that whole like Professor X origin thing.
No, like, was
the
that
obsessive,
him?
The obsessive Professor X Magneto stuff. What was the name of that book?
Ooh. Oh, Onslaught.
No, he wasn't.
I know. That was a joke.
The Unwritten was also him. Have you read The Unwritten, Glazer? I think you have that.
Oh, The Unwritten?
It is very
good. Oh, The Unwritten is great.
Yes. And he wrote a lot of Lucifer.
There's a few genuinely mind blowing ideas in there.
Ultimate Fantastic Four. X Men Endangered Species. Okay, that was him.
I think I did read The Unwritten because I remember Tom Taylor.
He did X-Men Legacy, right?
He was on that. Legacy. Oh. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Origins was the word.
Yeah.
But, and then he just started to disappear, right? Like he did a bunch of things I never really.
Well, he's a novelist now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
He's a novelist.
I didn't realize until this search just now that M.R. Carey, like the girl with all the gifts, is the same person. Mm. So now it clicks.
Yep. He made a bank with that book slot and now movie. So I imagine he doesn't need to write superhero comics anymore. Yeah.
It was good.
All right. So someone tell me what the hell October Faction.
Oh, yeah, so all right. October Faction, which we could be brief. So it's a new Netflix show. I'm looking for some kind of like lighter-ish fun stuff that's kind of new for the life hiatus. And so this was my first stab at it. I watched the first three episodes. It was okay. I might get around to finishing it because it's only like 10 or so episodes. And it wasn't bad. It just didn't really pull me in. The basic setup is it's a family where the parents are part of an organization of monster hunters. And the father, his family has like ties to this organization going back to the beginning of the United States and beyond. And the mother, they were high school sweethearts who a lot of bad stuff happened when they were young, and that's why they got together, and they've been together fighting monsters for, well, the kids are 17, so like 20-ish years or something. And they move back, the grandfather dies, so they move back to the town that the parents are from, and drama is emerging. Yeah, the setup is good, actually. Like, that's what drew me to it. I think that the execution is not exactly what I'm looking for right now. So I would give it like a C, and you know, maybe I'll get around to finishing it, but it definitely didn't like pull me in a way that I was like, I could watch it in a whole day kind of way, which is sort of what I was looking for today. So I would, yeah. So I'd give it like a C, like a soft slop is what it would be. Like, I just think I wanted them to draw the drama from a different place than they ended up trying to draw some of the drama. So I don't know. It just didn't hit my very particular taste. So okay. Perfectly. So I'll try again.
Answer me this, Roy, because I saw the previews for it and it seemed kind of fun, kind of interesting, but it also seemed like it was a very CW-esque show.
Oh yeah, it's definitely okay. CW-esque.
Okay.
I would say it's like a little bit, it's like Netflix meets CW, if that makes sense. Like, it has a lot of the Netflixy like choices, but it is also CW-y like. So okay. Like, maybe I guess you could say like the parents' storyline is relatively like Netflixy, but the kid storyline is very CW.
Okay.
So that's the way it is. It's a mashup a little bit, but like, I mean, I'd say it all sways a little bit CW-y. Like, I wouldn't, like, this show could easily have been transplanted to the CW and the violence toned down a little bit and it would be fine. So,
okay. I mean, I like that style of show relatively well. So,
yeah, I do too. Like, they sometimes miss with me, but I do tend to like that kind of stuff. So, like, I really liked Al and I got through the whole thing in like 2 days. The Order, which came out last year, which was like had a similar setup, but was very CW-y, and so stupid, but really fun, and also let you invest in the characters. Which is all I really want from these kind of shows, is like, if you get me to invest in the characters and their drama, I will follow you to all your silly places. I would definitely give this a slight slop, but you know, definitely not enough to make me want to be like, tomorrow I'm going to watch a couple more episodes. Or it made me jump to the other show I wanted to talk about, which is The Expanse, which I was like, you know what? I've been meaning to get back into watching it. I've read the books up to the second most recent book. And I enjoyed them, most of them. Some, you tended to be like, I really liked one, didn't like the second one all that much. So I took a break. Then I was like, I kind of like this series. Oh, really like the book I picked up with. And then the next one, I didn't like that very much. So kind of like, some of the books are really good. Some of them are, at least in my opinion, less good. But the show, you know, which Al and I watched like 4 or 5 episodes of, and then she bounced off. And so we sort of stopped watching. But I decided that I would just try power through some myself. And I really like it. It's very well cast. It's reminding me about like why I like these characters. It's just slow. I forgot how slow it was. I'm like, and particularly having read the books and watched this part of the show before, I was like, oh yeah, I know what's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. I've seen, and so maybe I should skip a couple episodes ahead and where it picks up, where I don't like know exactly how they reinterpreted it for the for the show. But it's definitely something I will get through probably in a couple of weeks. It's not something that's going to make me watch every episode like right away, but it's definitely something I'll come and watch two or three episodes of, or an episode before I go to sleep or something. Yeah. So I would give that a prop. Definitely. And you should definitely check it out if you like science fiction. But yeah, so that's kind of the TV I've been watching recently.
Nice.
All right. I want to prop some good old-fashioned comfort food that Netflix has put back on, The Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
Movie really holds up. Fantastic. It doesn't seem to do anything really wrong, even in the modern lens. And if you'd like something to pick you up, especially right now, it's on Netflix. Watch it.
Yeah. I can only wholeheartedly support that. It has long been my my favorite movie of all time, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, Shawshank Redemption, I've seen probably countless times. It felt like it was always on TNT at my parents' house from 2001 to 2005. So if you just turned on TNT at any time of any day, if it wasn't a Law and Order episode, it was Shawshank Redemption. So, yes.
And that's one of those movies, you just get sucked in, no matter at what point in the movie you tune in.
Yeah. Yeah. I should probably watch it. It's been probably about a decade since I've seen it at this point. So yeah, it'd probably be pretty decent to watch.
Maybe. It's sitting there waiting. And
see if it holds up.
It was great. Even still. All right, next up, Mr. Rogers, Neverwinter Nights.
Okay, so I have been on like a slight nostalgia kick, okay, recently. I've been replaying stuff while I'm waiting for, I was doing this even before the virus stuff happened and life got disrupted. I'm very much waiting for Persona 5 Royal to come out at the end of this month. And then, of course, we mentioned earlier the Final Fantasy VII remake. I just finished, last time in the episode, I finished Trails of Cold Steel 3. I beat Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Edition. I haven't gotten the expansion. Taking a little bit of a break before I dive into the expansion. Throw it a ball, which is also excellent. So I've been replaying Divinity 2 on the PS4. I played on the PC originally. Very good. A little clunky. The controls are a little clunky on the PlayStation. And I've also been replaying Pathfinder. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm also weirdly in the mood to play Neverwinter Nights, which was my favorite game. And for a long time, probably any video game, any single video game, it's probably the game I put the most hours into, if you include like all the fan-created modules that I played between when it came out. It came out my senior year of high school, so 2003. And then I stopped following the community actively in like 2008 or 9, and then got back into it in 2013 for like 2 years, and played a bunch of all different fan created modules. So that's like a decade of my life. So probably thousands of hours that I've put playing into this. So I was like, you know what? I haven't played it since like 2014. That's 6-7 years ago. I'll get the extended edition or the enhanced edition. It was only $20 and I'll play it. I'll try it. Well, that was seemed like it'd be so easy, but it was not. It is not. Took a lot of work to get it to work on my computer yesterday, and I finally, before bed, got it to work, played about an hour before I went to sleep. It's like, oh, I'll play it tomorrow, today, which is today. And then it stopped working. It stopped freaking saving the games. And when you went to save the game, it crashed and it deleted one of my saves. And you know what? Beamdog, I appreciate your remakes. I appreciate that you re-released Baldur's Gate at Baldur's Gate 2 and Icewind Dale 2 and Planescape. But you know what? I'm sorry, Will. Fuck this port. God damn it. Why can't you make this game work? All right. I can't get my $20 back anymore because I played it too long on Steam. So I'm stuck with this game that won't work. And there's no answers on the internet about this crash. And I'm annoyed because all I wanted to do was play this old game. All I wanted to do was play it. And they said I could. I paid my $20 and I couldn't. So god damn you, Beam Dog. God damn your shitty Neverwinter Nights port. And that's the end of Roy's rant. So slop the hell out of them. Slop it. Great game, though. Neverwinter Nights. Great game. Probably one of the best PC RPGs of all time. And definitely one of the best BioWare games. And definitely forgotten in many ways. Because it's kind of a little different.
I have never even played it.
Well, if the Enhanced Edition, it's old, so it works on basically any computer, except that apparently the Enhanced Edition just doesn't work for me.
If you're willing to Skype and talk me through it, since we're looking for a game, I'm more than willing.
It's very old.
Figure out how to do it alone.
But yes,
I will not do it. I don't give a crap about old. I really, so the thing I don't super love about modern games like Witcher is they feel a little bit too wannabe real, a little bit too little game.
That means. I mean,
I want my games to feel video game. And I know that's a weird distinction, but there's a certain element to that tech type I really enjoy that feels lacking. Like, it felt lacking in even things like Gears of War. Not Gears of War. God of War. Oh, look, Gears of War. Where they just want to, like, they're trying to make something feel like an action movie. I don't want to play an action movie. I want to play a video game. That's a different feeling.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. Like, I don't necessarily think, I wouldn't say that that's something that that Witcher 3 really suffers from, but I definitely think you can see that, particularly in the like extremely curated first-person shooter slash action-adventure games. You can definitely feel that way. Like, like Uncharted, its goal, right, is to try to make you feel like you're basically in a knockoff Indiana Jones movie, right? Like, Last of Us is just about making you feel like you're in a knockoff Night of the Living Dead, right? Or a Walking Dead episode, right? Down to like the extreme photorealistic graphic fidelity they're going for. And I also can find that sometimes disconcerting. But yeah.
It's fine. And most people seem to like that level of realism in their game. It's general, like, I don't think my preference is necessarily what it should be in this instance. It just means that what I'm looking for in a game when I read reviews, I have to be wary. It's why I asked so many questions. We talked about Divinity 2 yesterday, right? For a good while. And kind of what I was trying to edge out of you is how real it's trying to feel and how video
game. Oh, it's super video game.
And then I watched some, I watched some videos of it, and it seems like something I would really enjoy. Except the other thing I really hate about video games is I do not love
exploration. What? Oh, well.
I don't love exploration. Like, I don't mind a bit of exploration, right? But, like, when the game doesn't give me any real direction, I get kind of bored, annoyed. Like, I want a narrative.
Oh, well,
like, I'm playing for a narrative, not for, like, wait, which way do I go now?
You,
like, tell me
which
you
way and
I
go. Are, I don't care. Are similar in that. Like, I also prefer games that have a much, like, a tighter narrative structure than a lot of other games. Like,
that's why I don't love
Breath of the Wild,
Elder Scrolls,
or
I didn't play Breath of the Wild, but like it's the Elder Scrolls series has always been like there's too much, like after you get through the first couple sections, like go do stuff. I'm like, I could do that in real life. Can you just tell me a story, please?
Yeah, I mean, I feel
like I got things to do.
That's generally also my complaint with the Elder Scrolls and the post what are they called? Bethesda. Yeah. Fallout games as well, right? Like I do really want narratives, and I want really strong supporting characters. It's one of the reasons why I love BioWare games and BioWare story games. I feel like Divinity 2 in particular, while there is a lot of exploration, it's more structured that way. Like you can just kind of like you can follow. It's like, you know, Fort Joy, your goal is to escape Fort Joy, and there's like, which is the first area you're in. You get captured and you have to escape. That's not really a spoiler.
I've heard it's a noob island.
Right.
Riddle.
Yeah, yeah. So there's one way you escape, but there's like five different ways you can get to that way you escape, right? And you can figure out all the different ways. But there's kind of like one narrative path if you want to follow it, but you can then diverge. And then when it opens into the open world, it's really not that open of a world. Like you can be like, go to Driftwood. This is the part of the game I'm in, actually. It's like, go to Driftwood. And you can do 15 different things in Driftwood, but, you know, they're saying, well, you got to go find these people and pick which one you want to do first, and then da-da-da-da-da. It's not like, say, Breath of the Wild or Morrowind or even Witcher 3, which, like, one of my big resistances to Witcher 3 for a while was that, like, why I was very skeptical of it was that it's like, oh, you just wander around as Geralt and don't do anything. You just, you know, wander around, kill some monsters, and I don't know, do stuff. But it actually has a really strong narrative, and which is why I fell in love with Witcher 3. But my wife, on the other hand, she plays it in a much more, like, she likes games that the opposite of you, Aaron, where she just wanders off and, you know, picks flowers and murders monsters for like 20 minutes, you know, and like, I'm like, when I watch her, you know, play like Odyssey, like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which also has a strong narrative that you can follow, but you can also just do whatever you want as well. I'm like, well, when I, you know, I'll go to work, or go to a tournament, right, on Saturday, and come and leave, and I come back and be like, oh, what happened in the story? She's like, nothing. I've been, you know, I've been doing all this other stuff. I'm like, you know, I was gone for 10 hours. You've been playing all day.
Someone who strip mined literally every planet in Mass Effect, I say more power to you, Allah.
Will agrees with you, my love.
All right. Can I take us to the danger zone?
Go for it.
Republicans are pushing universal basic income.
No, they're not.
In their own way.
In their own way.
In their own horribly backward way. Who knew?
They're not.
That is definitely the danger zone.
I don't even. Yeah, that is definitely the danger zone. I'm too exhausted.
Also, I will at least say we did our podcast planning a real disservice by not putting our coronavirus talk at the end for the danger zone rather than talking about it all up front.
Whoops. Ooh, accurate. My fault. Other things were going to happen. We had like another 8 things to talk about. But sometimes it gets dangerous early. Bless you, Carla.
Well, Glazer went like straight from talking with us about coronavirus into the podcast. It was on his mind.
There we go.
So,
yeah, accurate. I put it first because we were talking
coronavirus about it, but into the podcast. It was like on his mind.
There we go.
So,